Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1004, update on Ukrainian fascism and a possible Third World War. This is being recorded on April 24th of the year 2018. For 4+ years, I have been covering the reintroduction and entrenchment of successor organizations to the OUNB, the Ukrainian Fascist Government, or a fascist institution that presided over Ukraine when it was a Nazi satellite state during World War II. There are many, many programs dealing with that and the various successor organizations. The Svoboda Party, whose militia, Combat 14, named after the 14 words, a white supremacist slogan minted by David Lane, a member of the Order, the American Nazi group that murdered Alan Berg, among other things, and also the Pravi Sektor organization, and a number of military formations as well. Although there are many people in Ukraine, for all I know, most people in Ukraine are not of a Nazi and fascist persuasion. The fact of the matter is that Ukraine, like just about every other former Soviet republic, is a failed state, or badly a failing state. And that has done what that sort of thing generally does, which is to engender extreme dissatisfaction and expressions of that extreme dissatisfaction on the part of the population of that country. We will be going into Ukraine and the way in which Ukraine is really the significant factor in the Russiagate psyop that we are being treated to. That, however, in our next couple of programs. In this broadcast, we are going to be taking a look at the introduction of many of these OUNB Nazi successor organizations into civilian law enforcement in various parts of Ukraine. They are doing what one would expect when those kinds of organizations are accorded civilian police powers. They are attacking political activists. They are attacking minority groups such as Roma, attacking gay activists and other things, and doing so with the collusion of many of the authorities. The introduction of organizations like Combat 14, again, the militia cadre of the OUNB successor party, Svoboda, and organizations, militia organizations derived from the Nazi Azov Battalion. They are, again, behaving as one might expect. And in addition to the operations of those organizations, it really should come as no surprise that the commander of the Azov Battalion, who had been head of the Kiev Regional Police, a guy named Vadim Troyan, T-R-O-Y-A-N, he eventually became head of the Ukrainian National Police and is now the deputy interior minister of Ukraine under Arsen Avakov, the interior minister, who is a patron of the Azov Battalion, and more importantly, perhaps, or of great political significance, is the fact that Arsen Avakov, again, a more or less unabashed Nazi, the guy who is a patron of the Azov Battalion, is the coalition, his people's party, is the coalition partner of Petro Poroshenko, the president of Ukraine. Poroshenko is unpopular, and should he turn on Avakov, that would lead to early parliamentary elections and quite possibly see Poroshenko turned out of power. In addition to to the alarming introduction of many of these Nazi or military and now paramilitary and civilian police organizations and their proliferation in Ukrainian society. We're going to be taking a look at the development of the Ukrainian military apparatus, and in particular, the role played by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency of the U.S., in developing the military sophistication of Ukraine. And given the position of many of these organizations, like Azov Battalion, in that Ukrainian national security apparatus, that is most alarming. Ukraine has tested a new cruise missile, and a guy named Tony Tether, T-E-T-H-E-R, a former head of DARPA, is now working for a couple of Ukrainian national security and defense organizations. A downed Ukrainian pilot who became a celebrated political hero in Ukraine has come forward and added fuel to the fire that some of the Ukrainian fascist organizations had been involved with the sniper attacks that led to the downfall of the Yanukovych regime, which may have been aided, that is to say, the sniper attacks by Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager. In any event, certainly the sniper attacks at the Maidan, in which not only were police shot at, but they returned some fire, those may very well have been authored by some of the Ukrainian fascist organizations, a guy named Andrei Parubiy, now the Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament, the Rada, has been identified by many people as leading the Maidan sniper attacks, and now a woman who became something of a hero to Ukraine has added fire to that, added fuel to that fire, at which point she then promptly recanted and said, nope, I misspoke myself, and she is now out of favor. One of the few current American political figures to speak up against the arming and financing of organizations like the Azov Battalion, Representative Ro Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A, from right here in the Silicon Valley, has once again been attacked as a Russian/Kremlin dupe, and that by the very same Christopher Harrison, a former Bush, that's George W. Bush, official, who not incidentally runs a security outfit with offices both in the U.S. and in Kiev, Ukraine, that professes to counteract or to specialize in counteracting Russian information warfare. And he was the fellow who tarred John Conyers as, quote, Putin's man in Congress, at which point, after having his departure signaled by alt-right blogger Mike Cernovich, Mr. Misogyny Gets You Laid, unquote, Cernovich. John Conyers, the founder of the Congressional Black Caucus, a man whose administrative assistant for more than 20 years was Rosa Parks. He departed Congress after that. Now, Christopher Harrison is opening up his fire on Ro Khanna as well. And we're going to wrap things up with a couple of interesting notes. Chrystia Freeland, who is the Canadian foreign minister, basically the equivalent of our Secretary of State, who is of Ukrainian heritage and who has cited her grandfather, who was a Nazi collaborator in Ukraine, as a dominant element on her political development. She, again, is the Canadian equivalent of Secretary of State, and she is not surprisingly a patron of the large Ukrainian diaspora in Canada and has placed Canada squarely in the reactionary camp vis-a-vis providing diplomatic support for the fascists in Ukraine. Four Russian diplomats pointed out that her grandfather and, by her account, a dominant influence on her political development was a Nazi collaborator. They were then expelled from Canada. One of the few American journalists who was willing to talk about the things that I have spoken about was the late Robert Perry of Consortium News. Robert Perry passed away in January of this year. I interviewed him in For the Record 893 and have used many of the articles about the reintroduction of Ukrainian fascists derived from the World War II period into Ukraine. I've used many of those articles in my programs. Following his death, the Prop or Not group, which is basically an online and cyber manifestation of the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine, attacked Robert Perry as, a Kremlin disinformation agent. So those are some of the things that we have on top.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
We're going to get right into this. One of the few people who has been covering the reintroduction of Nazis into Ukraine, albeit being somewhat equivocal in his overall assessment, is a guy named Josh Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, a former, interestingly enough, operative for the Agency for International Development, which has frequently functioned as a cat's paw for U.S. intelligence, the CIA in particular. Cohen has a Reuters story from March 19th of this year being 2018, commentary, Ukraine's neo-Nazi problem. It reads in part, as Ukraine's struggle against Russia and its proxies continues, Kiev must also contend with a growing problem behind the front lines. Far-right vigilantes who are willing to use intimidation and even violence to advance their agendas, and who often do so with the tacit approval of law enforcement agencies. A January 28th demonstration in Kiev by 600 members of the so-called National Militia, a newly formed ultra-nationalist group that vows, quote, to use force to establish order, illustrates this threat. While the group's Kiev launch was peaceful, National Militia members in balaclavas stormed a city council meeting in the central Ukrainian town of Cherkasy the following day, skirmishing with deputies and forcing them to pass a new budget. Many of the National Militia's members come from the Azov Battalion, one of the 30-odd privately funded, quote, volunteer battalions, unquote, that in the early days of the war helped the regular army to defend Ukrainian territory against Russia's separatist proxies. By the way, I'm going to interrupt briefly, reminding people of something I will be discussing at greater length in For the Record 106 about Russiagate. It's going to be quite a bicycle ride. Basically, that whole Russiagate nonsense, and nonsense it is about Ukraine, and beyond that, about the underground Reich. We should remember that Ukraine could be thought of as two countries. Western Ukraine, or Galicia, was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It also was the seat, basically, of support for the OUNB fascists in World War II. Eastern Ukraine is largely a Russophone / ethnic Russian region whose citizens did not want to be part of a recrudescent OUNB successor organization government. That has much to do with the civil war there, and also had much to do with why the folks of Crimea said basically to Russia, please take us back. Crimea had been part of Russia. Khrushchev, I think it was in 54, I may be going to put the question mark by that, then assigned that to being part of Ukraine. There had been a number of attempts by Crimea after the breakup of the Soviet Union to realign itself with Russia. They were rebuffed by Boris Yeltsin's government. Putin finally said, okay, we will do that in part to avoid Russia being cut off from the Black Sea. They did that, that is to say, Russia did not invade Ukraine. There was a popular referendum, and the military forces that Russia used in that were from a military, 16,000 some strong, were from a military base that by treaty Russia had in Ukraine. That should be borne in mind as we hear about Russia's separatist proxies here. Continuing. Although Azov uses Nazi-era symbolism and recruits neo-Nazis into its ranks, a recent article in Foreign Affairs downplayed any risks the group might pose, pointing out that, like other volunteer militias, Azov has been reined in, unquote, through its integration into Ukraine's armed forces. While it's true that private militias no longer rule the battlefront, it's the home front that Kiev needs to worry about now. Skipping down. Since the Crimean crisis, the militias have been formally integrated into Ukraine's armed forces, but some have resisted full integration. Azov, for example, runs its own children's training camp, and the careers section instructs recruits who wish to transfer to Azov from a regular military unit. According to Freedom House's Ukraine Project Director Matthew Schaff, SCHAAF, quote, numerous organized radical right-wing groups exist in Ukraine, and while the volunteer battalions may have been officially integrated into state structures, some of them have since spun off political and nonprofit structures to implement their vision. Quote, Schaff noted that an increase in patriotic discourse supporting Ukraine in its conflict with Russia has coincided with an apparent increase in both public hate speech, sometimes by public officials and magnified by the media, as well as violence towards vulnerable groups such as the LGBT community, unquote, an observation that is supported by a recent Council of Europe study. In recent months, Ukraine has experienced a wave of unchecked vigilantism. Institute Respublica, a local pro-democracy NGO, reported that activists are frequently harassed by vigilantes while holding legal meetings or rallies related to politically controversial positions, such as the promotion of LGBT rights or opposition to the war. Azov and other militias have attacked anti-fascist demonstrations, city council meetings, media outlets, art exhibitions, foreign students, and Roma. Progressive activists describe a new climate of fear that they say has been intensifying ever since last year's near-fatal stabbing of anti-war activist Stas Seryenko, S-E-R-H-I-Y-E-N-K-O, which is believed to have been perpetrated by an extremist group named C-14. The name refers to a 14-word slogan popular among white supremacists. What's not mentioned here is that that is the militia of the Svoboda Party right after the Maidan coup. Members of Svoboda held key positions in the interim Ukrainian government. From Wikipedia, about the 14 words, those were minted by David Lane, a member of the Nazi group The Order, who drove the getaway car for the assassination of Denver talk show host Alan Berg. Those words are, "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." As noted in the Wikipedia entry, there is a strong similarity between David Lane's words and the passages of Mein Kampf as well. Continuing with this account. Brutal attacks this month on International Women's Day marches in several Ukrainian cities prompted an unusually forceful statement from Amnesty International, which warned that, quote, the Ukrainian state is rapidly losing its monopoly on violence. Skipping down. According to Schaff and the Institute Respublica, Ukrainian extremists are rarely punished for acts of violence. In some cases, such as C-14's January attack on a remembrance gathering for two murdered journalists, police actually detained peaceful demonstrators instead. More about that below. Connections between law enforcement agencies and extremists give Ukraine's Western allies ample reason for concern. C-14 and Kiev's city-run government recently signed an agreement allowing C-14 to establish a, quote, municipal guard, unquote, to patrol the streets. Three such militia-run guard forces are already registered in Kiev, and at least 21 operate in other cities. In an ideal world, President Petro Poroshenko would purge the police and the Interior Ministry of far-right sympathizers, including Interior Minister Arsen Avakov, who has close ties to Azov leader Andrei Beletsky, as well as Sergei Korotkykh, K-O-R-O-T-K-Y-K-H, an Azov veteran who is now a high-ranking police official. But Poroshenko would risk major repercussions if he did so. Avakov is his chief political rival, and the ministry he runs controls the police, the National Guard, and several former militias. As one Ukrainian analyst noted in December, control of these forces make Avakov extremely powerful, and Poroshenko's presidency might not be strong enough to withstand that kind of direct confrontation with Avakov that an attempt to oust him or to strike at his power base could well produce. Poroshenko has endured frequent verbal threats, including calls for revolution from ultranationalist groups, so he may believe that he needs Avakov to keep them in check. Avakov's People's Party status as the main partner in Ukraine's parliamentary coalition increases Avakov's leverage over the Poroshenko bloc. An attempt to fire Avakov could imperil Poroshenko's slim legislative majority and lead to early parliamentary elections. Given Poroshenko's current unpopularity, this is a scenario he will likely try to avoid. More about the Combat 14 militia. We're going to take a look not only at their cleaning up of a Roma camp. Roma, along with Sinti, are the two main gypsy groups. Gypsy is actually something of a slur term. The Roma and Sinti were focal points of Nazi ethnic cleansing and extermination in World War II, and have also been a traditional outgroup and focal point of bigotry and often violent bigotry among many fascist groups in Europe and their sympathizers, including and especially in Eastern Europe. A Roma camp composed of people who had come there from the Transcaucasus looking for work was basically cleaned up, unquote, by the Combat 14 militia. And this came along with a whitewashing of the actual event from local media and was apparently done with the cooperation and the tacit cooperation of local authorities. From the Kharkiv Human Rights Protection Group, that's spelled Kharkiv here, K-H-A-R-K-I-V, Kharkov, K-H-A-R-K-O-V, and other transliterations. This is by Halya, H-A-L-Y-A, Koynash, C-O-Y-N-A-S-H, from the Kharkiv or Kharkov Human Rights Protection Group from April 23rd to 2018. Ukrainian neo-Nazi C-14 vigilantes drive out Roma families, burn their camp. And of that, and the headline pretty much expresses what happened. The police appear to see no need to take action and merely state that they have received no complaints. It is also alarming how many Ukrainian media, such as TSN, Channel 5, have simply reported this, quote, raid, unquote, effectively in Mazur's words. Mazur is a member of the Combat 14 militia. Again, it is also alarming how many Ukrainian media, such as TSN, Channel 5, have simply reported this, quote, raid, unquote, effectively in Mazur's words, without considering what threats must have been used to, quote, persuade, unquote, around 15 families to leave their makeshift homes in such haste. If Major is telling the truth, then the measures to remove the Roma families who had reportedly come to Kiev from Transcarpathia in search of work were the result of collaboration between Combat 14 members of the so-called, quote, Municipal Guard, unquote, and the Holosiev, H-O-L-O-S-I-Y-I-V, District Administration. In other words, this Nazi militia was working with the blessings of and in conjunction with the Holosiev District Administration, the local government. One of the interesting things, again, this article from the Kharkov Human Rights Protection Group, apparently Combat 14 has been operating as something of a Freikorps. The Freikorps were basically underground military units of the supposedly demobilized German army after World War I that were financed by local financial and industrial magnates to basically serve as anti-labor, anti-socialist, anti-communist, and anti-democratic armed forces. Perhaps the most famous of those was the Von Epp Freikorps, financed in considerable measure by German industrialist Fritz Thyssen, headed up by General Von Epp and featuring as its most important member, in my opinion anyway, Martin Bormann. The Combat 14 militia has been serving, apparently, as something of a Freikorps. From this article from the Kharkov Human Rights Protection Group, on the 26th of February 2018, Combat 14 posted an advertisement on their Facebook page, which quite openly offered their services as thugs to regular donors. They said that, quote, Combat 14 works for you. Help keep us afloat, and we will help you. For regular donors, we are opening a box for wishes. Which of your enemies would you like to make life difficult for? We will try to do that, unquote. I don't doubt that they'd be very successful at so doing. There is a food for thought post. I don't think I've incorporated this. Maybe I have, I think, into a For the Record show. I'll have to go back and look. But in 2009, a Russian lawyer and a journalist were assassinated by Russian Nazis. There is a powerful Nazi contingent in Russia itself, and that has been assisted and financed by people like Gerhard Fry and boosted by people like Paul Weyrich, whose Free Congress Foundation introduced many of the OUNB and other Eastern European fascist organizations into parts of the former Soviet Union during the closing phase of the Cold War. When there was a ceremony commemorating the assassination of those two Russian anti-fascists, the Combat 14 group basically clamped down on the anti-fascists. The anti-fascists were arrested, taken to the local police station, and apparently far-right thugs from Combat 14 who were alerted by the police showed up at the police station. It's also worth noting that the Combat 14 people were networking with Russian and Belarusian neo-Nazis in their crackdown on the marches commemorating the assassinations of Anastasia Babarova, the Sevastopol journalist, and Russian lawyer Stanislav Markalov. Reading again from this article, on January 19th of 2018, Combat 14 activists prevented the traditional remembrance gathering for Sevastopol journalist Anastasia Babarova and Russian lawyer Stanislav Markalov, murdered in Moscow in 2009 by neo-Nazi Russian nationalists. The claim that those honoring the two slain anti-fascists were, quote, separatists, unquote, was preposterous, and Volodymyr Chmerys, C-H-E-M-E-R-Y-S, one of the organizers of the remembrance event, asserts that they were confronted not only by Combat 14 thugs, but by Russian and Belarusian neo-Nazis as well. This apparently took place with the connivance of the local police authorities. Talking about the police instead of arresting the attackers, quote, they instead detained eight people who had come to honor Babarova and Markelov. The police later tried to claim that there had been no detention and that the activists had been, quote, invited, unquote, to the police station. There was no suggestion that the, quote, invitation, unquote, could have been turned down. The detained activists reported later that they had been, quote, hunted down, unquote, by the far-right thugs after leaving the police station. A member of the Human Rights Information Center who spoke with them believes that the thugs could have only discovered which police station the activists were being held in from the police themselves. That last sentence again. A member of the Human Rights Information Center who spoke with them believes that the thugs could have only discovered which station the activists were being held in from the police themselves. And again, they have the Combat 14 people have attacked gays and people who are opposed to the continued prosecution of the Civil War and other political dissidents as well.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
As indicated in the Josh Cohen article, the Azov Battalion as well has spawned a civil-slash-police militia. From Radio Free Europe/Radio Liberty of January 30th of 2018, an Ukraine ultranationalist militia strikes fear in some quarters, unquote, by Christopher Miller. And it talks about that and about the Azov Battalion. We've covered that in considerable length in other programs. They're called the National Corpus. And again, this is an Azov Battalion civil militia that is functioning in connection with or as proxies of the local police. This should come as no surprise. We heard about a former high-ranking Azov officer who is now a significant police official. In past programs, we have talked about the guy named Vadim, V-A-D-I-M or V-A-D-Y-N, depending on the transliteration, last name, T-R-O-Y-A-N. He was the commander of the Nazi Azov Battalion that has the swastika and the SS rune on their combat helmets. He took over as the head of the Kiev Police Department, Kiev being the capital of Ukraine. He also then became the acting head and the deputy head of the National Police. And after that, he became the deputy minister of internal affairs of Ukraine. That makes him the number two man to Arsen Avakov, a patron of the Azov Battalion. And again, Vadim Troyan, the former commander of the Azov Battalion. From Human Rights in Ukraine, from November 15th of 2016, accusations flying as police head resigns, leaving contentious deputy in charge. This also by Holya Koinash from the Human Rights in Ukraine. Katya Dekanoidze, that's K-H-A-T-I-A-D-E-K-O-N-O-I-D-Z-E, has resigned from her post as head of the National Police just 1 year after her appointment, seemingly in frustration with the limited powers she had to carry out real reform and political interference, I think without political interference. She also said that Vadim Troyan, who takes over as acting head of the National Police, is not politically independent, boys, an understatement, and therefore unsuited to the post. Doubts about the former Azov Battalion commander's suitability for high police posts were first expressed after his appointment as head of the Kiev Regional Police, and they remain of concern. And later, from Interfax Ukraine, an Interfax Ukraine article from the Kiev Post of February 8th of 2017, Cabinet appoints Troyan as Deputy Interior Minister. The Cabinet, reading in part, the Cabinet Ministers of Ukraine has appointed the first Deputy Head of the National Police, Vadim Troyan, as Deputy Minister of Internal Affairs of Ukraine. The point being that Vadim Troyan, commander of Azov Battalion at one point, became head of the Kiev Police. Then he becomes head of the National Police. Now he is Deputy Interior Minister. He is the number two guy for Internal Affairs, basically. Number two to Arsen Avakov, whose People's Party is a coalition partner of Petro Poroshenko, and Avakov is a patron of the Azov Battalion, very close to Andrei Beletsky, who formed the battalion, and Avakov is very close to the Nazi milieu in Ukraine. So it really should not appear to us as particularly shocking that we're seeing elements like the Combat 14, like the Azov Civil Corps militia, assuming police duties in Ukraine and basically conducting affairs in Ukraine in much the way that a Nazi organization would do elsewhere. I noted, by the way, near the end or at the end as the last item, and for the record, 1003, for those people in this country who doubt that Nazi militias and paramilitary right-wingers could ever be appointed as federal deputies and their deputization as part of Oliver North's martial law contingency plans were implemented and remain on the books, take a look at what is happening in Ukraine, where just such Nazi paramilitaries are in fact becoming deputies in the police establishment. They have powerful protectors and exponents in the government of Ukraine. In the event of an economic collapse in this country, and sooner or later, Trump's incoherent and uninformed political or economic policies are going to manifest as economic collapse, I think the already tangible sentiment against, quote, immigrants, unquote, and the lack of tolerance in many places for some of the tent cities, which during the Great Depression were called Hoovervilles, the willingness on the part of people to turn a blind eye or even to actively endorse and cheer on the treatment of homeless camps by some of these deputized right-wingers in much the way that many people in Ukraine cheered on or at least tacitly supported the liquidation of the Roma camp from people who had migrated there from the Transcaucasus to look for work. I think something very similar will be happening in the U.S. Now, in For the Record, program number 98, actually in several programs I have talked about the bloodless political assassination of former Michigan Representative John Conyers, the senior Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, and one of the formers of the Congressional Black Caucus, a man who employed iconic civil rights figure Rosa Parks as his administrative secretary for more than 20 years, and one of the few congressional critics of the Azov Battalion and U.S. aid and training for the Azov Battalion. He was removed as part of the hashtag MeToo movement, his removal being signaled by far-right blogger and more or less out-front misogynist Mike Cernovich. In a scandalous article In the Huffington Post, he was labeled Putin's man in Congress, and the author of that article was none other than Christopher Harrison. That's K-R-I-S-T-O-F-E-R, H-A-R-R-I-S-O-N. Well, no sooner had John Conyers resigned from Congress than Representative Ro Khanna, that's capital R-O, capital K-H-A-N-N-A, from right here in California in the Silicon Valley, he basically then took up the banner of denying, at least officially, overt U.S. funding and training for the Azov Battalion and similar organizations. And no sooner did he do that than, sure enough, the very same Christopher Harrison basically tarred Ro Khanna as, you guessed it, a Russian dupe, a Kremlin dupe, what have you. From The Hill publication of April 2nd of 2018 by, again, the very same Christopher Harrison who had loyally served George W. Bush in the first decade of this century, that California's Ro Khanna get duped by Russian propaganda, question mark. Reading in part, congratulations, Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat of California. It appears you were just duped by Russia and bragged about it. As a result, you promoted Russian propaganda about Ukraine's Azov Battalion being Nazis with text in the behemoth $1.3 trillion spending bill. The question is, who put you up to it? And it goes on in that manner, simply dismissing any notion that the Azov Battalion was Nazi. And there are an awful lot of people in Ukraine, among other places, who are of a similar persuasion. Indeed, the organization has the SS moon and the swastika on their combat helmets. Their emblem is a compilation of Nazi iconography. And skipping down in this article, speaking of Ro Khanna, you were filling illustrious shoes. In 2015, an unidentified lobbyist snickered Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, to do exactly what you had done. And the source for Christopher Harrison's exoneration of the Azov Battalion is none other than a guy named Roman Zvorich. You will see his last name, first name R-O-M-A-N, and his last name you will see transliterated as S-V-A-R-Y-C-H or Z-V-A-R-Y-C-H. Roman Zvorich was the personal secretary in the early 1980s to Yaroslav Stepko, the head of the OUNB, the dominant figure in the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. That was the renaming of the Committee of Subjugated Nations put together by none other than Adolf Hitler in 1943. It is a consortium of Central and Eastern European fascist organizations that collaborated with the Third Reich and then became a fundamental element of the Republican Party. Organizations like the OUNB, which dominated the ABN, the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Bulgarian National Front, the Croatian Ustashi, and others, basically became part of the Republican Party. They were also key elements of the Galen spy organization. And in the early 1980s, Roman Zvorich was the personal secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko, who, as the head of the World War II collaborationist government of the OUNB, collaborationist with Nazi Germany, implemented Nazi ethnic cleansing against Jews, Roma, ethnic Poles, and ethnic Russians, with the sort of lethal results that occurred elsewhere around Europe. I should note that then, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, a woman named Ekaterina Shumachenko, who was a key Ukrainian OUNB member, she was a member of the UCCA, the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the top OUNB front group in the U.S. She became Ronald Reagan's deputy director of presidential liaison, and then married Viktor Yushchenko, who was installed as head of Ukraine in 2004 following the Orange Revolution. And Viktor Yushchenko then instituted many of the same OUNB elements who are holding forth in Ukraine today. Roman Svarych was appointed Minister of Justice, that's the equivalent of Attorney General, under Viktor Yushchenko. He held the same position in both Ukrainian governments headed by Yulia Tymoshenko. Basically, he was the equivalent of Attorney General. He was the highest-ranking legal official in Ukraine under Viktor Yushchenko and both Tymoshenko governments. He then became an advisor to Petro Poroshenko. He is the spokesperson for the Azov Battalion. He is the source for the exoneration of the Azov Battalion by Christopher Harrison, and he represents a direct, incarnate, physical element of continuity between the OUNB fascism of the World War II period and the fascism gaining hold in Ukraine with the OUNB successor organizations like Svoboda, the parent organization of Combat 14, and Pravi Sector and organizations like the Azov Battalion and its various spin-offs.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
One of the key members, a fellow who was called the commander of the Maidan during the violence there in February of 2014, was Andriy Parubiy, who is now the speaker of the Ukrainian parliament, the Rada, that's R-A-D-A. In For the Record number 994, we took a look at, in For the Record programs 982, and again in 984, we took a look at indications that, in fact, Andriy Parubiy may very well have been one of the driving forces behind the sniper attacks and violence in the Maidan demonstrations that ultimately led to the flight of Viktor Yanukovych and the downfall of the Yanukovych government in Ukraine. Well, we will take that up at greater length as we take a look at Russiagate and the role of Paul Manafort in that. For the Record 1006, we're going to do a retrospective on Robert Mueller's activities in helping to sweep key aspects of the 9/11 investigation under the rug when Robert Mueller headed up the FBI. But more about that later. Charges echoing those against Andriy Parubiy were voiced by a woman named Nadia Savchenko, N-A-D-I-A is her first name, last name capital S-A-V-C-H-E-N-K-O. This appears to be basically something of a faction fight between elements of the Ukrainian OUNB successor organization, fascist milieu. More about that from the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty of March 15th. Of 2018. This is a Reuters story headline. War hero Savchenko accused of terror plot levels own accusations in Ukraine. Reads in part. Lawmaker and former Russian captive Nadia Savchenko has traded incendiary accusations with senior Ukrainian authorities and faces possible arrest over what Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko alleged was a detailed plan for a devastating, quote, terrorist, unquote, attack on Parliament. Skipping down. Savchenko, a former military aviator who spent 22 months in Russian prisons after being detained by separatists in the conflict zone in eastern Ukraine, claimed on March 15th that lawmaker Sergei Pashinsky, P-A-S-H-I-N-S-K-Y, played a prominent role in a deadly crackdown on pro-European demonstrators during anti-government Maidan protests that toppled Russia-friendly President Viktor Yanukovych in February of 2014. Speaking to journalists in front of the Security Service, or SBU, headquarters in Kiev, that SBU is the Ukrainian Intelligence Service, before she was questioned as a witness in a case against a man arrested last week on suspicion of plotting to kill President Petro Poroshenko and other officials in a series of armed attacks, Savchenko asserted that Lutsenko covered up what she alleged was current Parliament Speaker Andrei Parubuy's involvement in sniper shootings that authorities say killed dozens of people during the crackdown on the Maidan protests. However, Savchenko said later that she meant to accuse not Parubuy, but Pashinsky, and publicly apologized to the Parliament Speaker for a, quote, slip of the tongue, unquote. That would appear to be a wise move given Andrei Parubuy's strong links with elements like Azov, Combat 14, and so forth. Continued adherence by Nadia Savchenko to her accusation that Andrei Parubuy helped to implement the sniper attacks which led to the downfall of Yanukovych could perhaps prove damaging to her health. One of the things that is most alarming about the institutionalization of these OUNB and Nazi organizations, OUNB successor and Nazi organizations in Ukraine, is the continued arming of Ukraine. We're basically continuing to foster the military prowess of Ukraine, and with organizations that are directly evolved from the OUNB fascists of the World War II period, right on Russia's border. The possibility of a Third World War is one that I think we need to take very seriously. From the Kiev Post of January 30th of 2018, Ilya Ponomarenko, P-O-N-O-M-A-R-E-N-K-O, Ilya I-L-L-I-A, Ukraine tests new cruise missile. A new Ukrainian ground-based cruise missile underwent a successful test launch on January 30th. Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council Secretary Alexander Pichinov announced. Pichinov, by the way, has been a patron as well of many of the Ukrainian fascist organizations. I would note that the January 30th date may or may not be coincidental. It is the date on which Adolf Hitler assumed power in 1933. Something of a pedigree element to the successful testing of a new cruise missile by Ukraine may be seen in an article from Defense News of March 1st, 2018, article by Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Mehta, M-E-H-T-A. What is DARPA doing in Ukraine? Reads in part, DARPA, the Pentagon's high-tech office, is working with the government of Ukraine to develop capabilities to help Kiev in its hybrid warfare challenge. DARPA Director Stephen Walker, who recently took over that job after 5 years as the agency's deputy, told reporters that he had personally visited the country in 2016 for talks with Ukrainian military, intelligence, and industry leaders, skipping down. This is not the first tie between DARPA and Kiev. The Ukrainian government has hired Tony Tether, T-E-T-H-E-R, who led DARPA for the entirety of the George W. Bush administration to help lead a reorganization of their science and technology efforts, something Tether in a LinkedIn post said was necessary in part because so much of Ukraine's S&T facilities were in the territory seized by Russia. The former DARPA head has also consulted for the Ukraine Bomboprom, that's UKROBROONOPROM group, Ukraine's largest defense contractor, and just a few weeks ago was added to the group's supervisory board in the move that Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko called, quote, a symbol of effective cooperation between Ukrainian and American partners, unquote. With the penchant of the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine for staging provocations and the downing of MH Flight 17 appears to have been just that. We've covered that extensively. The bid by Ukraine for NATO membership is altogether alarming. From Consortium News of April 18th of 2018, an article by Will Porter, P-O-R-T-E-R, Ukraine's NATO bid risks even worse U.S.-Russia ties. I have excerpts of the article in the written description for the record 1004. It will be online and available to listeners presently due to the limitations of time. We just don't have the ability to go into the time to go into that here. Canada has, in addition to the U.S., has been a major locus of the post-World War II OUNB Ukrainian diaspora. And Canada is also a NATO country and has been echoing many of the propaganda lines about what has been going on in Ukraine. And for the record, 948, we covered the fact that Chrystia Freeland, F-R-E-E-L-A-N-D, the Canadian foreign minister, the equivalent of our Secretary of State, is not only of Ukrainian extraction, but her grandfather, Michael Chomiak, C-H-O-M-I-A-K, was a Ukrainian Nazi collaborator. And an article from the Toronto Star from April 5th of 2018 by Thomas Walkom, W-A-L-K-O-M, why did Canada expel four Russian diplomats? Because they told the truth. And skipping down, we now know how the Russians have been subverting Canadian democracy. They have been propagating truthful news. That information comes courtesy of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who on Wednesday finally explained the motive behind his government's decision last week to expel four Russian diplomats and refuse entry to three more. In a written statement, Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland also said that Russians had been using their diplomatic status to interfere in our democracy. Skipping down, the only trouble with all of this is that the Russians were telling the truth. Freeland's paternal grandfather, Michael Chomiak, was a Nazi collaborator during the Second World War. And in Ukraine proper, it is now illegal to tell the truth about the OUNB during the war or the UPA, the Ukrainian Partisan Army. If you tell the truth, and that truth is that they were basically collaborators with the Third Reich and implemented Third Reich ethnic cleansing policies, you can be arrested. One of the few American journalistic outlets that was willing to discuss what has actually happened in Ukraine was the Consortium News site and its editor, Robert Perry, who died of cancer in January of this year. Following his death, the Prop or Not organization, that is an OUNB-linked group or OUNB successor organization linked group in Ukraine that we discussed in For the Record 943, began attacking Robert Perry after his death on their Twitter account. There is a link to that and some excerpts of their attacks on Robert Perry in the written description for the Record 1004 that would be available presently. However, we are almost out of time. This concludes For the Record program number 1004. Update on Ukrainian fascism and a possible Third World War. This is being recorded on April 24th of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.